At this time, I'm going to call the meeting of the House Labor Committee to order. I understand we have a quorum. Would someone like to move the minutes to the previous meeting? Representative Detmer.
Mr. Chair, I so move the minutes.
Thank you. All in favor of approval of the minutes, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, same sign. Okay, minutes are approved. Members, we need to go through a procedural fix for House File 6, which we heard last week. Any questions on what happened? I guess we could entertain, but right at this point, I'm going to move to reconsider the vote by which House File 6 was referred to the Ways and Means Committee. Any discussion on that? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Same sign. Motion passes. The bill is back before us. I will now move that House File 6 be re-referred to the Ways and Means Committee. All of those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Same sign. Thank you. The motion passes. Next on the agenda is House File 11, and I will move that House File 11 be referred to the Government Operations Committee. We have the bill before us. Representative Lesh is present, and he may proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's great to see you in the chair's chair.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Ms. Chair and members, I think this might be my first time presenting in front of the Labor Committee. I don't know, but it might be. No, I'm not a freshman. Okay, I don't have to bring cookies. But I probably should have anyway. Does anyone have any cookies we can pass out? I'll bring them next time, Representative Jean. Okay.
I got one bite left. You want
to? Yeah, give it to Jay. Give it to Representative Jean. Chair and members, in Minnesota, we want to be a caring state. We want our families to be healthy and safe, but right now that isn't the case for far too many people. So an estimated 36% of Minnesotans, working people, 932,000 Minnesotans currently do not have access to paid sick and safe time. Now keep in mind who these folks are, okay? These aren't just your average workers. These are the people who you want to have sick and safe leave. I'm talking about the folks standing on the other side of the sneeze guard at Subway, okay? Who your food is right in front of them. I'm talking about childcare workers, the people who are taking care of your kids. You know the reason why you got sick like four times this winter? Because your kid brought that home, okay? Those are the people who don't have earned sick and safe time. And this is far more important that we cover these folks than we cover the other folks in Minnesota, because these are the folks who are more susceptible to disease and spreading disease due to the jobs they have. So this impacts families in every corner of our state with disproportionate impact on women and people of color. That means in a state with the second most Fortune 500 companies per capita, our moms and dads have to face a terrible choice between caring for themselves or their loved ones when they are ill, and the loss of wages or even employment, because in many circumstances it is still legal for these workers to be fired for needing to take time off to care for themselves or a loved one. And members, it's getting worse. I've carried this bill now for, I think it's either 2007 or 2008 that I introduced this with former Senator Ellen Anderson, okay? What is it?
11 years.
It's 11 years, okay, because Representative Cagle was working with us at that time in the coalition. And at that time, nationally, 41% of people nationally did not have earned sick and safe time. We're up to 42% now don't have it, okay? So we're not getting any better. We're getting worse. Minnesota has dropped to 36% because of the cities in our state that now have earned sick and safe time. Okay. And by the way, during those instances when the cities, municipalities were passing those bills, everyone, Chicken Little was yelling the sky was going to fall and people are going to go out of business. None of that happened. None of it happened. The businesses are still strong in those states. And if you ask employers, just like when this was originally passed in San Francisco back in 2006, you ask the Chamber of Commerce and the business thereafter, they say, you know, yeah, we guess it's not such a bad thing. I know we were yelling about how things were bad beforehand, but now we think it's okay. This is a common sense bill. It benefits employers through improved recruitment and retention, lower employer health care costs through the better use of preventive care, and lower presenteeism, which cost billions of dollars per year. Presenteeism is when your employees come to work sick and infect everyone else, and you got your entire staff that's out. You can't train enough people to get up to speed on that. And at, I know 11 years ago, that had a cost of about $6 billion per year, and that was numbers that came from the Bureau of Labor Statistics. The Minnesota Department of Health also noted that in a 2015 white paper, this is a public health issue as many employees are least likely to have paid sick time and work these jobs that I talked about as food service, and they have to choose between a paycheck and their health. It has implications for the general public. So no matter where you live, your job, the color of your skin, through our differences, we want many of these same things. You want to snuggle with your sick kid to make them feel better, like I do with my 2.5-year-old. Seeing your doctor before your illness goes from bad to worse, being able to recover from the flu without worrying about missing paying bills. This bill, House File 11, is about moving towards the kind of caring state we all want Minnesota to be. So for the specific bill in front of us, it tracks closely with those municipal sick and safe time ordinances that passed in Minneapolis, St. Paul, and Duluth, as well as those passed in 11 other states. Article 1, Section 1 is the definitions. So all employees except independent contractors, you got to work at least 80 hours in Minnesota for a single employer, would earn sick and safe time to care for themselves or loved ones. Subdivision 2 details the minimum standards for accrual. We're talking about 1 hour earned for every 30 hours worked. So the average person out there checks their time, they're accruing at a much faster rate than 1 hour for every 30 hours worked. Okay, so this is a minimum bare bones effort. And it can be thought of as a bank of accrued hours. You can get up to 80 hours at any given time. You can't accrue more than that. Unused sick and employees begin to earn sick and safe time at the start of employment, but employers may require employees to wait up to 90 days before they can start using their earned sick and safe time. So this was meant to address, you know, when we first started bringing this on, the cities, this was before they passed their own ordinances, said, well, you know, come on, a kid comes home from college and is a lifeguard at the beach, works for the city, and now we got to pay him, sick time. No. You got to wait 90 days to use it, so summer's over in 90 days. You accrue up to that time, but you just still don't accrue that much. It's 1 hour for every 30 hours work. Subdivision 3 details allowed uses, so it includes care for oneself or your loved ones due to physical or mental health needs, domestic abuse, sexual assault, or stalking, or school or business closure due to weather or public emergency. So that includes these past couple days. What were you going to do? Well, on the radio, you're hearing about school closings. What the heck am I supposed to do now for child care? Well, guess what? You can take care of your kid those days now. This subdivision also sets out other conditions, including notice requirements, documentation, prohibiting the need to find your own replacement, and the increments of time that can be used. Subdivision 4 prohibits retaliation against employees who request to use it. Subdivisions 5 through 7 protect the employee's position and benefits while using the time. Subdivision 8 details employee notice of their rights to earn sick and safe time, and Subdivision 9 gives employees access to know how much earned sick and safe time they have available. 10 and 11 are employer records and the confidentiality of those records, and Subdivision 12 makes it clear that those requirements are a floor, that other paid time off policies can meet these requirements. Remember, when I first brought this up 11 years ago, former Speaker Zellers, before he was Speaker, expressed concern to me that, well, what about, you know, everyone's moving to paid time off. I mean, why would you stack this on top of people that are using paid time off? That's not what this bill does, and that's not what it ever intended to do. It's not how it was originally written. If you're already doing what we expect by taking care of people in this way, you're held harmless, and that's our intent. And if anyone wants to come forward and state, well, we're not being held harmless, you know, I'm all ears. I think it was Delta came and said, you know, what about our flight crews, about how we measure how much they're here and everything, and we already provide that time for them. Not a problem. That's fine. We're not looking to rope those folks in, and we don't have an amendment on that yet, but we probably will. Finally, subdivisions 13 and 14 deal with when an employee is transferred or terminated if the employer changes and requires employees to be allowed to keep their earned sick and safe time unless the separation from employment is more than 180 days. So Section 2 repeals the existing statute, and Section 3 is the effective date. So that, Article 2 are just the enforcement provisions that relate to Dolly, other and how they enforce wage and hour violations. And Dolly has asked me already regarding a language change that would allow them to do their job and make it, you know, more easily allow them to enforce it. And I'm of course, open to that. So with that, Mr. Chair, that runs through the bill. What I'd like to do is, I think we've got testifiers, right? Who's coming up and testifying?
Chair Lesh, we have a healthy list of testifiers here, and we're going to allow them approximately 3 minutes to finish their comments, and then we'll move on with discussion and questions from the panel.
Okay. Did I make it in under my time, Mr. Chair?
No, you did not. You never do.
Well, no one held up a stop.
Okay. First testifier we have up is Elizabeth Spihar from the Main Street Alliance, followed by Lauren Schotthorst of the Chamber.
Good afternoon. My name is Elizabeth Spihar. I'm here from Duluth, where I own and operate a small bubble tea and kombucha shop called the Snooty Fox. Last May, Duluth joined states and cities across the country in creating a local earn sick and safe time policy. As our community explored if and how to implement such a policy, I was asked for my opinion on the matter as a small business owner. In the beginning, I wasn't totally sure what I thought, and so I joined the conversation to learn more and share my own thoughts. At that point, we did offer our full-time employee 2 weeks of PTO, and our part-time employee had received 4 weeks of paid maternity leave. I wasn't sure how the proposed policy would affect the policies I had in place. Small businesses came forward during that time to share how they approach paid leave and how it has actually helped their businesses. Beyond being the right thing to do, it helped their businesses. Employees who were already offering PTO to care for health or family member health gave examples of benefits to their businesses like increased employee happiness, health, loyalty, and morale. In my first 5 years of experience with running a business, I have grown to appreciate the absolutely vital role that capable and hardworking employees play in the success of your business. What the conversation in Duluth showed us was that smart business owners recognize the value of employees who work hard and do everything they can to retain them. Something I do appreciate about both the Duluth policy and the proposed statewide policy is the flexibility in language, and that helped me get on board. It allows businesses who currently have some sort of policy for earned paid time off to continue with their practices, and it will give other businesses who may not know how to implement this or are choosing not to for whatever reason, it'll give them the chance to join in shaping today's common sense labor practices. Thank you.
Thank you, Elizabeth Spihar. Up next, Lauren Schotthorst, followed by Ray Perez. Can you identify yourself and proceed?
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Lauren Schotthorst, and I serve as the Director of Labor and Management Policy at the Minnesota Chamber. I appreciate the opportunity to once again provide testimony and share the views of our members on House File 11. As the committee is aware, the Minnesota Chamber represents 2,300 employers and over 500,000 employees in every industry across the state. The majority of our members are small and mid-sized businesses, and we do include Fortune 500 headquartered companies. In my previous testimony before the committee, I communicated that we share the goal of giving Minnesotans access to the time they need to care for themselves and their loved ones. But we continue to highlight why balancing employer and employee needs, program scope and costs, is also really important to achieving that goal as well. I recently spoke to a small custom signage and graphic company located in the metro region. A husband and wife owned and operated shop with about 4 employees. I spoke with this owner on a day that, due to the weather, schools were closed, and their employees were not able to come to the office, and they accommodated that. They do this without a mandate and without having to comply with a specifically defined benefit, state-dictated paperwork, and reporting compliance mechanism that add on additional costs and challenges to their operations. Everyone pitches in, particularly owners, who want to succeed in their business despite many burdensome regulations at the state and now local level. Minneapolis, St. Paul, and Duluth have their own local sick and safe time leave mandates that business owners must comply with inside these communities. And many of these businesses, just not small businesses, are struggling with those costs, regulatory burdens, and staffing obligations. Our members, over time, have developed practices and benefits specifically tailored to account for these issues in a way that works for their operations and, importantly, takes care of their employees. I want to emphasize again that the committee, that employers considered their talented, hardworking, reliable workforce one of the most essential and valuable parts of their operating their businesses. But on a national scale, the cost of doing business in Minnesota is already too high and presents significant operational challenges for many of our members. From taxes, top five, to electricity rates, 15th and 20th, to health insurance and workers' comp premiums, 31st and 22nd, it's becoming increasingly difficult to keep our Minnesota's companies strong. Minnesota is less competitive because public policies, especially taxes and regulations, make our cost of doing business higher than in many other states when taken in sum total. We appreciate the goals of the proposal and the time that members of this committee, including the bill author, have spent meeting with us to better understand our members' concerns. But we are concerned about another proposed new state mandate potentially disrupting existing employee benefit packages tailored to the needs of individual workplaces, industries, and employees, and the challenges it presents to, in terms of staffing our workplaces. Thank you, Mr. Chair, for the opportunity to share our perspective of this legislation with the committee today.
Thank you, Ms. Shothurst. Ray Perez is up next, followed by Jessica Luman. Can you identify yourself, please, and proceed?
Hi, my name is Ray Perez. I am a social studies education major at St. Cloud State University. My mother is a medical receptionist and retail manager. My father is a military vet and is going back to school while also working as a maintenance person in the local hospital. I'm here today to tell you my story about why earned and sick and safe time is necessary for my life. My youngest brother has asthma, and when he was little, he would often have to stay home when it was too cold or when his allergies were acting up. As the oldest of five children, I often had to stay home with him because neither of my parents had paid sick time. The first time I remember staying home from school to take care of him was when I was 12 years old. My parents needed every paycheck, and they were faced with an impossible decision: force my sick brother to go to school or pull me out to take care of him. I remember missing a lot of time during middle school and high school, especially during my junior and senior year when I was taking college-level courses but getting berated by my teachers for missing class. I don't blame my parents. I know they were doing their best to support and take care of our family. They shouldn't have had to pull me out of school because they couldn't afford to miss a paycheck. I blame the systems that failed to support us, that failed to protect hardworking families like mine so that my parents could balance working full-time and taking care of my brother. Minnesota families deserve better. The lack of earned sick and safe time put me in tough situations when I was a child, and it still does to this day. I now work two jobs, one in childcare, one in retail. I don't have sick time in either, and I have to make really difficult decisions to see if I can miss a day of pay to take time to care for myself when sick. If you think working with little kids is hard, try doing it when you lost your voice and are fatigued. In both of my jobs, I work with people, and I'm worried one day I can get someone else sick because I can't afford to call in sick and miss a paycheck. I'm going to school right now to become a teacher and be the first person on my dad's side of the family to earn a bachelor's degree. But it shouldn't matter if I work in childcare, retail, or education. I deserve to be able to take care of my health and my loved ones no matter where I work. Please support Earn Sick and Safe Time to make sure no Minnesotan has to make another impossible decision between staying home to take care of themselves or making ends meet, so that all workers can be treated with dignity and families like mine can thrive.
Thank you. Next up, we have Jessica Luman, followed by Elena Hain.
Mr. Chair and the committee, my name is Jessica Lohman, and I work at a small company called Knitcraft Corporation located in Winona, Minnesota. We have approximately 85 employees. We were founded by a German immigrant who believes wholeheartedly in the American dream and having a place of business that gives back to its employees and the community at large. Knitcraft Corporation believes in instilling within our employees pride. At Knitcraft, we have a different way of looking at personal time off and sick leave. We call it well time. And it's earned. It's earned in two-hour increments by having perfect attendance for a month. Perfect attendance is defined as showing up to work on time each day that they're scheduled. They are able to start earning well time within the first month after they start working directly with KnitCraft. Well times roll over from year to year. Employees can use it instead of their vacation, which is earned based on years of service, when they need to take time off at work for any reason. They can have it paid out to them when they leave employment as supplemental income. Well time makes them feel good about themselves and having us as their employer. When I took over as HR and operations director of KnitCraft 2 years ago, I experienced something I had never seen before. Attendance issues are nearly non-existent. People come to work on time and they don't miss days. And when you ask them why, it's because they don't want to lose their well time. It's become part of our culture. Last year, I had the honor of recognizing over 30% of our employees for perfect attendance in 2018. And 10% of those employees were recognized for having perfect attendance for the last 5 years. They had never been late, and they had never missed a day, excused, due to well time. If HF11 is approved and KnitCraft Corporation is required to give employees 1 hour of sick and safe time for every 30 hours worked, we will no longer be able to afford our well time program. You take away the employee's ability to earn and feel pride in that accomplishment, and you're regulating a benefit that a company can feel good about gifting its employees. I have seen the difference of people who earn their well time versus people who feel entitled to their sick time, and the results are drastically different. When someone is entitled to something, they sometimes take it regardless if it's needed or not. This not only hurts us as a business, but also upsets their coworkers. It creates a strain on working relationships, production, and business profitability. Small businesses struggle to compete against large corporations in many ways already. We find our small niche in the benefits such as employee appreciation days, company picnics, and our aforementioned well time program. In order to entice employees to come on board, we give them a sense of family, flexible schedules, and when emergencies happen, a sense of pride in what they earned. It takes away our creative freedoms to resolve issues with out-of-the-box ideas like well time. This is putting another regulation we have to pay that keeps us from doing things our own way, and it's a way that currently works for us. I ask the state of Minnesota and this committee to please vote no on HF11 and allow our small businesses to continue to compete in the state that we love.
Thank you very much for your comments, Ms. Luhmann. Next up is Elena Hain, followed by Wendy Wolf. Please identify yourself.
Representative Lindina, members of the committee, my name is Elena Hain. I am a registered nurse at Children's Hospital in St. Paul, and I am member leader at the Minnesota Nurses Association, which is a labor union that represents about 22,000 bedside nurses who live and work in Minnesota and parts of Iowa and Wisconsin. I am here to testify in support of House File 11, the Earn Sick and Safe Time Bill. I work in the Pediatric Intensive Care Unit, otherwise known as the PICU. We take care of babies up to young adults. Some of the children I take care of are acutely critically ill, who may come in with sepsis, meningitis, a newly diagnosed brain tumor, or a new diagnosis of a chronic disease such as diabetes. While it varies a lot, the average length of stay in the PICU is about 7 days. For example, if a baby contracts respiratory syncytial virus, otherwise known as RSV, they can't handle their secretions and the virus produces, and they end up in the hospital. We would take care of them in the PICU for about 5 days and then transfer them to the med-surg floor of the hospital for another 5 days or so until they get better and they're able to go home. Once they leave the hospital, they'll still need more time to get better at home before being able to attend daycare. 10 to 15 days is a long time for a parent to be off work while their baby is sick. Families need earned sick and safe time to be able to care for their children when they need it the most. We have parents who could lose their job, so they can't stay with their critically ill children. I've heard parents express their guilt that they are abandoning their baby at the most vulnerable time. They say that they can't afford to take time off work, they carry insurance for their family, or they're a single parent and they have to pay their bills. What we usually tell these parents is that when their child is the sickest and on a ventilator, that you should leave then because they don't know whether, the child doesn't know whether or not the parent is there or not. And then they can save whatever time they do have to be there for when their child is off a ventilator and awake and wanting them. I can't imagine the decision that our families have to make every day. Everyone deserves access to earned sick and safe time to care for their children and their family members. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Hain. Wendy Wolf is up next, followed by Stephanie Menning.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. My name is Wendy Wolf, and I am the wife of a permanently totally disabled police sergeant. He was injured in the line of duty 14 years ago, and he has a brain injury and requires supervision. I wanted to let the committee know that even if this bill passes, there will still be a class of people in the state that do not have this protection. Because my husband was injured in the line of duty, it has a separate set of rules from everybody else. The workers' compensation system has been very careful to classify family caregivers as something other than an employee. So I don't have any of the legal protections that normal employees would have. Minimum wage doesn't apply to me. I don't get sick or safe time, any of those sorts of things. So if this bill was passed, there would still be a group of people that has no protection. And it would seem to me, if we're going to impose costs on businesses, protecting the families of injured workers should come before adding another benefit to all of the other workers in the state. I'm well aware of the chamber's opposition to these sorts of protections, including protections for my family. But I gave up a $50 an hour job, and I get $20 a day to take care of my husband. I have not had a day off in 14 years unless I find a family member to come and take care of him, because he starts fires. I mean, the employer's attorney literally said in the respite care hearing, so what that he started the microwave on fire twice? It's that bad. So please, as you're mulling this over, keep in mind that there is still a group of people in this state that would not be protected under the law if this bill passes. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Wolf. Your comments are well taken, and I'd like to speak with you afterward about another bill, possibly.
Mr. Chair, I have to go to my part-time job that I am able to do.
We have your contact information. Yes. We'll be getting hold of you. Thank you. Stephanie Menning, please, and then after Stephanie Menning, Samantha Serrano.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Stephanie Menning. I'm the Executive Director for the Minnesota Utility Contractors Association, or MUCA. We represent over 130 contractors and suppliers engaged in excavation, site work, and construction of underground infrastructure critical for everyday life, water, stormwater prevention, cable, gas, electric. These are all necessary, and most people don't notice it missing until they can't take a hot shower or get a glass of clean water to drink. I'm here today in the hopes of persuading this body to preserve the rights of private employers. MUCA members and their thousands of employees request that you protect commerce by not enacting a one-size-fits-all wage or benefit package. Last month, the Department of Employment and Economic Development reported that Minnesota is at 2.8% unemployment for the fourth month in a row. As I'm sure you know, 3% unemployment is considered full employment. Deed also stated that for the full year, Minnesota added 31,441 jobs, a growth rate of 1.1%. That was below the national rate of 1.8% and ranks us as 27th nationally, 12 spots worse from our position in 2017. In other words, we are already heading in the wrong direction. Workplace mandates will continue to hurt Minnesota's job growth rate and will have a negative effect. The construction industry in particular already suffers from a major lack of available workers, as noted by the several bills this body is proposing to increase funding to organizations that attract workers to the trades. MUCA member companies vary in size. Some have 7 to 10 employees, others have several hundred. All of them want to attract the best workers. The best way they can do this is through the freedom to operate their business, determine their own wage and benefit packages that distinguish them from their competitors. MUCA contractors need workers to accomplish building the many infrastructure projects you have all promised to your constituents, on time and under budget if possible. For an industry that is already in dire straits when it comes to workforce availability, these proposed bills will do more harm than good. I ask you to consider the undue burden these labor mandates place on business. They will increase costs to both employers and their employees and will result in Minnesota's continuing decline in the job growth rate. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you for your comments. Samantha Sereno, followed by Karim Munoz. Please identify yourself and the interpreter as well, and proceed.
Mi nombre es Samantha Serrano Vargas.
My name is Samantha Serrano Vargas. My name is Aledis Valdovinos, and I will be translating for Samantha. If we could also have a little bit of leniency on the time for this reason. Thank you.
Certainly. Thank you. Proceed.
He trabajado en la industria de construcción por años, y en este tiempo no he tenido seguros y seguros pagados cuando es enfermedad.
I have worked in the construction industry for years now, and I have never had paid sick leave.
He trabajado como recluta porque no trabajo para una compañía local, sino que vengo con compañías que vienen de otros estados.
I work as a recruited person. I don't come from a company and have not worked for a company that is coming here from Minnesota. I am contracted by companies outside of Minnesota that come to do work here.
Okay, so thank you. Let's take a pause and have everyone please be seated and get some quiet back in the room here. Okay, thank you for your cooperation. Go ahead and proceed.
Bien, entonces pienso que en este estado tenemos la posibilidad de llegar a que esto sea una ley puesta para todos porque es muy necesario. Lo he visto en mi área laboral.
I've seen it in my labor area, and I believe that Minnesota is a state capable of having the capacity to do this.
Cuando nos reclutan para trabajar, prácticamente dependemos del patrón. Entonces, tenemos que estar al día. No importa si estamos enfermos, tenemos que presentarnos al trabajo. ¿Por qué? Porque ellos prácticamente nos están cubriendo los gastos.
Because we are recruited for work from these outside companies that come to do work in Minnesota, we rely on them specifically for housing, for everything that you need to live in the state that you're working in.
Cuando alguien se reporta enfermo, a ellos no les interesa. Simplemente dicen, te vas a presentar a trabajar porque se te está pagando lo que es renta y trabajo.
When somebody shows up sick, they don't really have a concern about that. They want you to show up to work, and since they're paying your housing, your food, and everything, they're basically in charge of what you do and don't get to do.
Cuando he visto personas que son locales que trabajan aquí mismo y es cuando están enfermos y ellos dicen, okay, no te presentes a trabajar hoy, no te presentes mañana.
I've seen cases where somebody will show up sick and they are told that if you can't show up today, you better not show up tomorrow.
Por eso es que es muy necesario que lleguemos a algo más concreto, positivo para lograr lo que se apruebe.
That's why I believe that it's important for us to come to a more concrete solution and something that's a lot more positive for people who are impacted by it in this way. That's everything I want to say. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your comments. I understand next up is Adam Hansen and then Ed Stewart. Oh, Karim Munoz, I'm sorry. Karim.
Good afternoon. My name is Karen Munoz. I am a member of CETUL. Thank you for having me here today. I am from St. Peter, which is 1 hour 30 minutes away. I am a single mom, and a few weeks ago, I was sent to the hospital for an emergency surgery, and I have to miss work. I was there for more than a week with obviously no money for my rent to pay my bills, and now the hospital bills, that is very expensive. I was also at risk of losing my job because of it. I was also having another surgery in March, so obviously I have to have days off without pay. And one time my daughter was really sick and I needed to see the doctor. And I told my boss that I had to miss work in order to take her. He trained me by saying that if I didn't show up, then he would fire me. So my daughter, very sick, had to wait all day until I got off work at night, 9 o'clock at night. Like I say, I am a single mom, living and surviving, check by check, like many other workers around Minnesota who can't leave work for sickness. We need to pass this law because we really need it for ourselves, for our family. We deserved this long time ago. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Adam Hansen, please. Followed by Ed Stewart.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Adam Hansen. I'm with the Associated Builders and Contractors. Our contractor members and their employees throughout the state of Minnesota are part of the 70% of construction workers who choose to be merit shop craft professionals. We share many of the sentiments that have already been expressed by a number of the testifiers, so I don't want to repeat those. What I do want to share with the members of the committee is how this bill disproportionately affects the construction industry and those merit shop craft professionals. Under the bill, contractors are allowed to be exempt from this sick and safe time mandate if they pay their employees, their construction workers, prevailing wage rates. Currently, prevailing wage laws only apply to projects funded in whole or in part with state funds. That means like private projects like single family homes, senior living, restaurant and retail establishments in your district, as well as county, local, and school construction projects aren't subject to prevailing wage. We have concerns about how the method that the Department of Labor uses to set those prevailing wage rates, but that's a conversation we can have later. By exempting contractors from the sick and safe time mandate by simply paying a certain one-size-fits-all wage rate doesn't give their employees the sick and safe time benefits that this bill seeks to provide. In fact, the exemption doesn't solve the problem of being forced to show up to work sick, doesn't solve the problem of not being able to stay home with a sick child. Our contractors pay their craft professionals based on merit and experience, not a one-size-fits-all wage scale and benefit package that comes with prevailing wage mandates or this bill in particular. Because prevailing wage rates vary county by county, the prevailing wage exemption in this bill will essentially create an 87-county compliance fiasco for our contractor members, depending upon where they're working. There are numerous examples of prevailing wage rates throughout the state, with neighboring counties having drastically different wage rates for the exact same type of work. With the high demand for skilled craft professionals across the state, our contractor members are already providing competitive and flexible wage and benefit packages to attract, train, and retain these men and women without the need for this new legislation. ABC and our contractor members have concerns about this bill, as I have expressed, and its attempt at implementing a new one-size-fits-all mandate doesn't take into account the practices that they're already doing. I'd be happy to answer any questions the committee may have. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Thank you, Mr. Hansen. Ed Stewart is up next.
Good afternoon. My name is Ed Stewart. I'm an Isaiah leader who lives and worships in St. Paul. I'm here to speak in favor of earned sick and safe time. My Latina daughter has struggled her entire 12-year working career to make ends meet. This became more critical 4 years ago when she took sole responsibility for her infant daughter. Like any financially stretched parent, there's always great fear about whether you can be there for your kids when they need you. My daughter faced this very situation. 2 weeks ago, my granddaughter's daycare closed due to the extreme cold. My daughter was able to notify her employer and stay home with her daughter without fear of lost employment or wages because she had access to earn sick and safe time in St. Paul. Having access to sick and safe time gave my daughter peace of mind. For me, as a father and grandfather, it was comforting to know that my granddaughter could be safe and warm with her mama on some of the coldest days in years, and my daughter didn't begin a financial downslide toward ending her dream to finish her BA and become a nurse. My daughter and thousands like her are why I worked so hard with Isaiah to help pass Earn Sick and Safe Time in St. Paul. Yet this benefit shouldn't be limited to only those who work in St. Paul, Minneapolis, and Duluth. Earned sick and safe time should be offered statewide. People shouldn't get penalized for having to pick up their children when their daycare closes or when they get sick with the flu. We should be a state that's building a caring, family-friendly economy, not one where people struggle to work with dignity. It's time for our state legislators to act with courage needed to do what is right for all Minnesotans. It's time for us to pass Earn Sick and Safe Time. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Stewart. Up next is Javon Swanson, followed by Bruce Newstead.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and representatives. My name is Javon Swanson. I'm one of the pastors at Gloria Day Lutheran Church here in St. Paul, and I'm also a clergy leader with Isaiah. Near the end of Matthew's Gospel, Jesus tells a parable that ends with people asking, Lord, when was it that we saw you hungry and gave you food, or thirsty and gave you something to drink? That we saw you a stranger and welcomed you, or naked and gave you clothing? That we saw you sick or in prison and visited you? And the king will answer them, truly I tell you, just as you did it to one of the least of these who are members of my family, you did it to me. This bill is about those whom Jesus called the least of these. Tony is a member of my church who currently works in information technology. One night not too long ago, he got home from work and was making supper, and he accidentally sliced off the tip of his finger. He went to the emergency room and came home later that night with stitches. The next day at work, he tried to tough it out, but hours of typing was too much. He said he was actually bleeding through his bandage onto his keyboard at work. His boss told him, yes, he could go home, but it would be unpaid time and he would receive demerits. This is just wrong. Now, the congregation I serve takes seriously our call to care for the least of these among us. A few years ago, we worked with Isaiah and organized to help pass a citywide sick and safe time ordinance in St. Paul, the strongest of its kind in the country, which benefits over 72,000 workers of our lowest income workers in the city. After that, some legislators decried a patchwork of regulations that was hard on businesses. They said one state, one rule should be the policy. On this point, I actually agree. Let's pass one rule that protects all Minnesotans. Let's follow St. Paul's lead and pass the strongest statewide sick and safe time law in the country and set the bar high for the rest of the nation. Don't do it just because it's good policy. Do it because we have an obligation to care for the least of these. Do it because it's the right thing to do.
Thank you, Mr. Swanson. Up next is Bruce Newstead, followed by Montana Melikin. Mr. Newstead.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, good afternoon. My name is Bruce Newstead. I work for the members of the Minnesota Retailers Association. We're a group of retailers across the state that serve customers in partnership with our employees. I appreciate the opportunity to provide some perspective on House File 11 today. First and foremost, in my conversations with my members, one thing is always clear when talking about employee compensation and benefits. That is, my members have a strong and deep recognition of the importance of employees, and with that comes a commitment to taking care of those employees to the best of their ability. For some retailers, the best of that ability includes policies for full-time and part-time employees that provide paid time off for illness and many other reasons. And many of those policies offer compensation and, equally as important, flexibility for the employee. Some of those policies today likely exceed what is outlined in House File 11, and other policies may meet the spirit of Representative Lesch's bill, but be not perfectly compliant with each and every provision. Again, I haven't met a retailer across the state that doesn't want to take good care of their employees. Unfortunately, not all retail business models support the level of benefit outlined in the bill. Sometimes those that aren't able to reach this level of benefit or the spirit of it are small businesses, family-owned businesses, or new American businesses, where frequently family members work together in the business. Often in these businesses, there are hopes, aspirations, and plans for growth, and at the same time, there are the realities of competitive business constraints in those models. In these cases, I often hear about how the focus surrounding time off centers on flexibility and working with the employee to create a situation that works for the employee and the employer. As this bill is considered by the House, we'd ask that there be a recognition of the various different business models and approaches to time off. A good start would be a stronger mechanism to deem policies that meet or exceed the spirit of the bill as compliant. In addition, we'd ask for flexibility for business models that today can't support this level of benefit, but offer other options for employees. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you for your time today.
Thank you, Mr. Newstead. Quintana Milliken, please, followed by Henry Scott.
Hi, everyone. My name is Quintana Milliken, and I am a small business owner and also a member of Main Street Alliance. I own a restaurant and catering business called Mama's Kitchen. I just want to say that I am here in full support of Earn Sick and Safe Time. While watching the implementation process happen throughout St. Paul and Minneapolis, I have been able to provide it for all of my staff, which includes multiple full-time employees, part-time employees also. Last week during the snow vortex, we had a situation where we had to close or open, or we had to make decisions around who was going to be off and who wasn't. Policies like Earn Sick and Safe Time help you pre-plan because you budget out how much am I going to be spending on employee benefits. And by the cities making the decision to create a floor of how this is going to work, it allows business owners to plan their finances in advance. But in particular, as I'm preparing to open a second location in the suburbs, I won't actually have that floor. I won't be able to financially plan in that way. I won't be able to figure out what type of recommendation would be best for me to implement at my business because many suburbs have not done this. But we're watching right now cities like Duluth and other locations are looking into this policy, and I think it's on each and every one of you as elected officials to start to implement that. It's time for you guys to create a floor of what each business should be implementing into their processes. Particularly as a woman of color, a young person, as a new American, I see priority in creating quality labor policy. As someone who grew up in a low-income household and was able to save all of my money and to open a business right in my own neighborhood, actually, right in both my electeds right here, being able to open something in my own neighborhood and by being able to save all of my money and investing into the neighborhood that I'm from, I've been able to create quality benefits for my employees. But I would like to see everyone do that. I would prefer that I'm not the one-off and that I carry an extra burden as an employer. I want to see every business in my neighborhood doing the same, and I think it's on each and every one of you to create at least a floor minimum. When the United States decided to end slavery, folks said, we can't afford it. Like, labor is expensive, literally what folks said. When we decided to end child labor laws, people said, how will we build businesses? And now you're hearing the same rhetoric again that we can't afford Earn Sick and Safe Time. It's less than 3% of my budget. I plan it in advance. And as a young person, a person of color, as a new American, I can do it every day. And I believe every other business can do the same. It just requires us to work directly with our elected officials, our businesses, our associations, and to create quality policy that puts this country in the right direction. Thank you.
Thank you. Henry Scott, please. I'll remind the audience to refrain from applause or any celebratory expositions. Thank you. Can you identify yourself for the tape, please?
Henry Scott. How you doing, Chair, members of the community? I was trying to figure out how I could show y'all that I support this. I guess the best way I could do this is by giving you some insight to my life. While I do this, I want you to remember three things about me. One, I am one of many. Two, I work in every aspect of your community. And three, what was the third thing? I'm one of the people that don't get sick at safe times. So me, I work as a temporary worker. And working as a temporary worker, I come into many jobs. I work in restaurants. I work at the stadiums. I work at hospitals. I'm talking about this is just me, myself, not like the people that I work with. I work in factories. I work all over the communities. I work in schools. I'm also a community mentor. I'm out there doing things all the time. During this last winter, I went through quite a few things, okay? One, I suffered from depression. My girlfriend has left me. My best friend passed on. I lost my wallet with my rent money in it. During all this time, I have no time to take off and go and talk to no therapy, take no therapy lessons or none of that because I'm steady trying to strive and keep up with my community. I also wanted you to know that, what else was I going to say? This one. All right, so as I said, it all just went away just like that. I'm sorry. As I said, I work in many aspects of the community. I don't get a lot of time to take off. I have many things, bad things that happen in my life. I get sick over the weekend. I mean, I've had the flu. I've had toothaches. I still have to be at work. So for people who don't get sick at safe time, like I said, I'm one of many. Imagine having 1,000 of me working in your community every day, just like everything just slipped just in. That's it.
Thank you, Mr. Scott. Is there anyone else in the audience that has any fresh perspectives they'd like to share briefly? Okay, hearing none, appreciate the timeliness of the testimony, and we'll move on. Pardon me?
No.
Okay. Any questions from for Chair Lesh on the bill? Any comments, questions from the committee? Chair Cagle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Lesh, I went back and looked when we were advocating for that bill. It was 2007. And I don't know if you remember the testimony from that committee hearing way back when. But there was a woman that came to that committee hearing that has stuck with me ever since. And her name was Delia. I haven't kept in touch with her, but she had two children. One had broken their arm, and the other one, I can't remember why she had to take time off for to care for her son and her daughter. But because she had taken so much time off to care for her son and her daughter, her own ailments, she ignored them. She ended up losing a kidney because she had taken time off to care for her own kids and couldn't afford to take any more time off. She lost a kidney because she couldn't get any sick time. And so that story stuck with me for all that time. And so I really want to thank you for bringing this bill forward again. Mr. Chair, I'd like to request a roll call.
Okay, roll call will be conducted. Thank you. Representative Chair Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I promise I did not coordinate this with Representative Cagle at all, but my memory of your initial involvement, I want to thank you so much, Representative Lesh, was up in Duluth almost 4 years ago to this day. A large group of people gathered in Duluth, and you introduced this very much similar or almost exact same bill. And there was someone named Tiffany McDonald at that press conference that you had, and she talked about how she lost her job. She actually lost her job because she had to take care of her sick son. And, you know, we've heard many similar stories today, and I think, you know, when Representative Cagle talks about going back to 2007, I'm talking about going back to 2015. It is past time that this bill gets passed into law and enacted, because the urgency it's even more true than in 2007 and 2015. Every year we delay, so many people are impacted and affected.
And I appreciate your introducing this bill and this committee moving it on. It's urgent. It needs to get done now. So thank you.
Representative Vogel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, you know, I too empathize with people. And, in fact, our small business has put in place a PTO from, as was mentioned, a competitive standpoint, because not only is it the right thing to do, but in today's environment, it's hard to attract employees and keep them. Unfortunately, I look at this and I have some questions, though, on the way it's written. And it says that it starts, if you're an employer, if you have one employee. It goes on to talk then about family, saying, you know, basically it widens it out by saying if it's a significant relationship. My question to Representative Lesch is, I'm thinking of last week or the last few weeks when we've had these snow events, and you have a small business of yourself and maybe two or three other employees who happen to be plowing snow. At the same time, their kids' school is closed, which I think under 4.19 would allow them to take the personal leave. Yet, if they do take the personal leave and there's only a few of you around, you can't plow the snow and you probably lose your contract and you may be out of business. Is that something, is that addressed in here, or am I missing something?
Chair Lesch.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Vogel. First of all, this does not apply to contractors, and I think the gist of your question is that, well, if you know, you're letting kids off from school. What I would say is that we've got major problems now. And I had another bill up in front of another committee this year to address an issue about people not being able to get their prescription drugs, and people were dying. And a question posed to me by someone on your side of the aisle was, hold on a second, what if a drug company pulls out of Minnesota because we prohibit price gouging and people can't get their drugs if somebody dies? People are dying now. We're trying to address a problem. So you're bringing up a hypothetical, and I don't know if there could be a way to address that in the bill. I would hope that there would be. But I brought this bill because we've got major issues now of people losing jobs and getting sick over this. And I guess if you have a proposal that would solve that, I'd be open to an amendment. I would note that a parallel bill, which is not the same thing, but the paid family leave, you know, may be an option. You've got both sides paying into a situation like that where someone could afford to perhaps, you know, bring someone else on to take care of that if they have a sick kid or find child care or something. But it's not specifically addressed. Your unique situation, I don't believe, is specifically addressed in the bill.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess that was one of my concerns. If you go down to 6.15, it says that we'd have to, or the employer would have to, give notice in other appropriate languages. I'm wondering how that is defined and determined.
Chair Lesch.
Well, I'm sorry, I don't have a copy of the bill in front of me. Maybe we could have, if you're asking about a technical answer about how it's defined, maybe we could have research do that, Mr. Chair.
Restate that, please. I'm sorry.
Could we have, he's asking about a technical aspect of the definitions. Could we have research speak to that?
Certainly. Ed Weeks, would you like to take a shot at it?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, members, 6.15, the notice has to be provided in English and other appropriate languages. I've seen different ways this has been addressed in other bills. My read of that is if the worker's language is other than English, you'd probably have to give it to her in that language.
Thank you. Anything further, Representative
Thank
Vogel?
You, Mr. Chair, and I guess that was a question. I guess the other thing then I'd look at 11.1. It says extreme financial hardship, and I agree with the intent here is that you don't want to drive somebody out of business, although we already established that under the one employee thing that could happen anyway. But what is extreme financial hardship? Is that how is that going to be determined?
Chair Lesch.
I'm not sure if that's in the definition section, is it not? No. Then that's left up to a determiner of fact Okay, it's situation specific. Human beings make a decision about what extreme financial hardship is, and that's why we don't have a hard definition for it.
Representative Vogel.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I recognize that the concept here is good, but at this point, I can't vote in good conscience for a bill like this going out because I don't think we've addressed some of these serious things. And by the way, the snowplow thing actually was something that I was talking to a person last week about and how they were getting through this time because some of those people have to be there 24 hours. They're basically sleeping in the front end loader. So I do think that this stuff is relevant. And until that can be addressed, I can't see myself supporting this bill. Sorry. Thank you.
Understood. Representative Detmer.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative, on line 7.9 through 7.34, there discusses the employers who offer a more generous sick leave safe time policies. And there are a lot of employers who offer a very generous safe time sick leave for their employees. But on line 7.21, the policy cannot otherwise conflict with the minimum standards of the requirements provided in this section. What does that mean?
Representative Lesh.
Well, Mr. Chair and Representative Detmer, the minimum requirements spelled out in the section are in black and white. So 1 hour for every 30 hours worked and the other things you got to do. Maybe I don't understand your question that clearly.
Within Representative Detmer. Mr. Chair. And why are the carve-outs provided for collective bargaining situations and for the constructive industry, but are not for the industries or businesses?
Chair Lesh.
Okay, wait. I mean, maybe I'm misunderstanding your question, Representative Detmer, but that would essentially gut the bill. If you make a requirement for uniformity and allow everyone else to do a carve-out, that guts the entire bill. Am I not understanding you correctly? You're saying why allow some people to have a carve out and not others?
That's correct.
Okay, well, because those folks came to us and say, based on our unique situations, this would make it difficult to apply. So just like the, an airline came to me yesterday, the day before. I can't even keep the days straight these days. Things are busy up here. But and said, listen, we already provide this, this benefit. And your requirement would allow us to do accounting that would make us violate your law, but we do comply with it, just not under the terms that are spelled out. That's okay with me. And if you have another, industry that does that complies with the requirements, but they're going to run afoul of this because of a technical aspect, I have no problem finding a way to draft them into it.
And Representative Detmer? And a final question. Representative Lesh, do you please explain what you see as the difficulties of this bill as it applies to small businesses. Do you see some difficulties here?
Well,
Chair Lesh.
Ms. Chair and Representative Detmer, absolutely. Okay, sure. I run a small business. I pay almost 40% in taxes on anything that I bring in. I got to dot I's and cross T's. I got to watch and see. Now I pay my employees more than $15 an hour, but it's still difficult to jump through those hoops. There is no question about it. When we bring forth a law like this that says, hold on a second, we have to do something like earn sick and safe leave or paid family leave or something, we absolutely do have to think about that. But I do look at these other jurisdictions. In the 11 states, Minneapolis, St. Paul, and Duluth, and there's got to be, I don't know how many cities there are. I remember, I think, 11 years ago when we started this, Representative Cagle, it was probably a dozen. Then it moved up to 40 municipalities or local governments or something. There's not a single one of them that has gone back on that. Not a single one has reversed themselves. And most of them that I know of, if you ask them, hey, do you think this is a bad idea, they'd say no. We're not going to reverse ourselves on this. If you ask a small business owner, is it a pain in the rear to have to jump through another hoop? They're going to say, yeah, it is a pain. But after a while, you get used to it, and overall, it's a good thing for everyone. So I understand your point, and I'm trying not to be dismissive of it. I think it's a real concern that needs to be addressed, which is why we have committee.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Lesh. Thank you, Representative Detmer. Representative Jung.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Lesh, for bringing this bill forward. I think it was in 2014 when I was still working here at the legislature as a staff. My father had a stroke. And I remember during that time it was very hard for me and my family. But fortunately for me, I had accrued enough comp time and had sick time and had colleagues here at the legislature who were willing to donate their work hours or their sick time for me so that I could have more time to take care of my family. And as I'm sitting here hearing testimonies from everyday people who share their struggles, I can't imagine why I have that benefit and they don't. And so I believe that we need to pass this bill to recognize the physical, emotional, as well as financial labor that our hard workers go through. So thank you, Representative Lesh, for your leadership on this. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I too have empathy for people, but I also have some empathy for the employers, and you touched a little bit on small businesses. But I'm also wondering, Representative Lesh, you said that the construction industry came to you and explained to you their unique situation. Can you tell me what is so unique about the construction industry?
No, and I was mistaken. We don't do carve-outs. Mr. Chair and Representative Fabian. We've not done carve-outs. The construction industry has made certain statements here. I was referring to concerns that have been raised to me by an airline about how the fact that they already offer it, but they've got flight crews that don't spend time in Minnesota, where are they based, that kind of thing. That was kind of the issue that I'm talking about. I didn't mean to speak, and I can't remember. I think that was Representative Vogel's question. I can't recall, but he spoke to certain language, and I may have given a confusing answer on that.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So why are you doing the carve-out, I'll call it, for construction industry if they pay prevailing wage?
Chair Lesh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Fabian. Prevailing wage in statute considers time off for illness. So that's the reason.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So then in my area, I have companies that bury fiber optic cable. And in some cases, they're using money from the state grant program. In other cases, they're just putting the cable in themselves as a private business. And in other cases, they're using money from the CAF II funding. We have three different layers of prevailing, or three different wage scales there because of prevailing wage. Is this going to be calculated just for the employees that are paid prevailing wage, or is it for everybody?
Chair Lesh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Fabian. I can't answer for you right now the technical. I can give you a technical answer for the three, you know, for your situation, whether it's burying cable or something, but I could certainly try to get an answer for you online because, yeah, there's no question that because of these differences, there's going to be some complications. But I can't give you an answer right now in terms of who's paying what and at what time and at what wage scale.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And then you mentioned the airlines, and I had that in my notes, and it has nothing to do with the airlines. But what about employers from out of state who are employing people in Minnesota?
Mr. Chair and Representative Fabian, that's something else that I had talked to other people about. I'm familiar with the Minnesota, music crews that come in. I mean, we still have carryovers of folks that do sound editing from the days of Prince, when Prince built up Paisley Park here, who come into the state and they're not here for a long period of time. What kind of requirements do they have? TV and film, people who film movies here. There are considerations that, of course, could and should be made for that. I don't have an answer for you right now because none of them have come to me
But if anyone does come to me about it, I'm willing to work with them. Our intent is not to be overly onerous for someone to whom this wasn't necessarily intended to apply.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I was thinking more, I wasn't thinking about those industries. I'm thinking more about up in the part of the state where I live. You know, we have sugar beet harvest, for example, and there's trucking companies that haul beets from Humboldt, Minnesota to East Grand Forks or to Drayton, and some of those trucking companies are based in North Dakota. And we have the same thing going with a small mining company up there that mines peat. They have a trucking company that's in Grafton, North Dakota, and they come to Minnesota with their trucks. And then there's construction companies in Grand Forks that do business in East Grand Forks. How are you planning to address those situations? I mean, what do you want for the employees and what do you want for the business?
Chair Lesh.
Well, Mr. Chair and Representative Fabian, I guess I'm assuming certain things about how they operate, how often they operate here, but I would imagine in most cases that this won't even apply. They won't hit the thresholds of the 90 days. I mean, if you're scooting in, you start accruing, but you don't do enough hours. It was like 11 years ago when we started this, the city's coming to us saying, hang on a second, our lifeguards at the public pool, now it's just going to be this whole headache. We said no, because you can't even use them for 90 days, and the summer is gone after 90 days. If you've got another situation, you know, bring it to me. I'd need to see the details of it.
Representative
Thank
Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, your bill says 80 hours is where we start. It's not 90 days. I'm not sure if we're not communicating effectively or what.
Well, Mr. Chair. Yes, 80 hours, but you cannot, well, hold on one second here. I'm reading a note that's been sent to me. Restate your question. The bill says 80 hours on.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate that. I'm just picking out the sugar beet thing. I haul sugar beets all winter long. It's a lot more than, and they're based in probably in North Dakota, but they're hauling and working in Minnesota. Picking up beets there and going to Drayton, North Dakota. How do we manage that?
Chair Lesh.
Well, Ms. Chair and Representative Fabian, I guess I'm not sure what you're asking. How do we manage it? I'm not managing the business, so I don't know. Are you asking, are they working in Minnesota? If they're working in Minnesota, they're working in Minnesota. We have very specific laws about whether you're working in Minnesota related to how you pay state income taxes, right? I mean, that's not too much of a problem. Like if you live in Hudson, Wisconsin, but you work in Minnesota, you know, you can file your taxes. And remember, there's that giant back and forth between whether or not Dayton was going to give money to Scott Walker because we were losing our pants on the reciprocity issue for taxes. And that came down to a formula of, you know, where you were working, where you were living. There's a lot discussed in that, so I imagine we would work it out the same way.
One more time, Representative Fabian.
We're sensing that, too, okay, Mr. Yes. Chair. Okay, well, obviously we're going to have to continue the conversation about that, but the legitimate thing is that trucking company is based in North Dakota. The employee lives in North Dakota or may live in Minnesota, but they're working in Minnesota. That's my question. Is that company going to be required to abide by the statutes that you want to have passed into law?
Well, Mr. Chair and Representative Fabian, yes. I'm not, you know, if that was the base of your question, and if a company out of state has people working in Minnesota, do they have to comply with Minnesota law? Yes. And maybe I'm still misunderstanding your question.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So my final thing is with the small businesses that I represent in Roseau and Greenbush and Carlstead and places like that. You know, the employees there are more than their employees. They're their neighbors, their friends. They go to church together. The kids play basketball or hockey together. And a lot of them are struggling to keep the doors open. They really are. When you come up to small towns in greater Minnesota, there's a lot of empty buildings on main streets. Do you have any kind of, I mean, you've got a carve out here for the construction industry. Do you have any empathy for the employers who really are trying to do a good job, who really appreciate their employees? But they're going to be mandated to do this. Do you have any suggestions for them how to manage this? Do you have any carve-outs? Are you willing to take some amendments?
Chair Lesh.
Mr. Chair and Representative Fabian, I think I've stated a few times that if someone has a reasonable accommodation that they want based on their circumstances, I would absolutely listen to that.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate that. And the other thing is that no matter what we do, if they don't get a carve-out or whatever, there's only so many dollars. You're a small business owner, you said. There's only so many dollars you can put into that compensation pie, right? I mean, money doesn't fall from the sky so that you can compensate your employees more. And I think that's a valuable, it's a noble thing to try to do. But if the state comes in and says you must do this or you must do that, do you see a scenario where other salary compensation benefits could be reduced because now we have to do this instead?
Chair Lesh.
Okay, I don't understand that question. Mr. Chair, Representative Fabian, do I see a scenario where a particular business could choose to reduce some benefits in order to provide this? Is that your question?
Yes.
I guess. I mean, I Ms. Chair and Representative Fabian, you know, I run a law firm, okay? I don't run a trucking company a farm. I'm not super familiar with the benefits that they choose to offer or the benefits that their employees want or the benefits that they need to offer in order to attract good employees. I do know that no matter what business you run, you deduct employee salaries above the line. So you don't pay taxes on them. And when we pay our employees, when I pay my employees, I know that there's a certain amount of money that I allocate towards who I can pay for salaries, but I know that when I allocate that to them, that's, you know, almost 40% less that I have to pay in taxes as well. So I always have my eye on that ball too. It's not like, you know, it's a finite amount. So I would guess perhaps that could be the case. I don't know about every single business in the state.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Final
Representative
question. Final question. Well. Final statement. I know in some of the states and some of the cities where they've done this paid leave, they've done some exclusions, some exemptions. I was under the impression that Minneapolis actually has some exceptions in their law. I'm just wondering if, kind of reaffirming what you said earlier about taking a look more closely at your bill and making sure that we're not hurting small businesses, particularly in northern Minnesota.
Chair Lesh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Fabian, I can't get, I mean, you know, like I said, I've been carrying different versions of this bill for 11 years now, and I really can't guess as to what people are going to need when they come forward. They're going to have to put it out, and someone's going to have to offer that language an amendment too. That's the way we do things around here. So, yes, but, you know, I'm not going to guess and try to offer language.
Representative Vogel, thank you for your patience.
Thank you, and for working me one more time. Just one thing. My sense is, even though I'm not satisfied this should leave this committee today, it probably will. And with that being the case, if we look at 8.3, and assuming that there may be some changes, my concern there is it says paying at least the required rate established in a registered apprenticeship agreement for apprentices registered with the Department of Labor and Industry. And it seems to me when we had that discussion a few weeks ago on the helmets to hard hats that there are very few of those that exist. And one of my concerns has been there's not a lot of young people coming into the trades now. One of the ways to encourage that may be if we can find people that would be willing to work in the construction trades and learn, and if that could possibly be broadened a little bit beyond maybe just those approved by Department of Labor Industry, so that indeed if there needs to be an exception, which I think there may be, that we can bring more young people in, that we could do that. So just a suggestion, because my sense is that we're not going to have a chance to amend this again in this committee. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Vogel. Your assumption is correct. Any final comments from the author?
Mr. Chair, members, I had some, but then I forgot them. I would say this. I appreciate the difficulties raised by business owners, more importantly, small business owners, in the different hoops they have to jump through in order to provide for a better Minnesota, and that should absolutely be a shared effort, shared responsibility for folks. I also really, and quite frankly more so, appreciate the hardships faced by those people who are without earned sick and safe leave. And I also appreciate the hardship faced by the people of Minnesota who have a lesser quality of life because we don't have it. So folks who are outside of Minneapolis, St. Paul, and Duluth who don't have the benefits of this, who have to worry about their kids getting sick, who have to worry about getting sick from coworkers who show up because of presenteeism. That is a major issue. That costs our state a lot of money every year. And like I said, when we first looked at this 11 years ago, it was $6 billion was the amount of money that was put out by presenteeism by the Bureau of Labor Statistics. So I want to say that my priority in solving problems here is solving problems for those folks that don't have this benefit. And I think the results will show from any jurisdiction that has passed this is they're not willing to go back. They're not willing to reverse themselves. They like what they got. From the first jurisdiction that passed this, San Francisco, we're almost 15 years past when they originally passed that. And a lot of other jurisdictions have jumped on board. They see it as a good thing, and it's going to be a good thing in Minnesota, too. I ask for your yes vote.
Thank you, Chair Lesh. There's a roll call. Andy Jurgensen will take the roll.
Representative Sundin?
Aye.
Representative Cagle?
Yes.
Representative Vogel?
No.
Representative Brand?
Aye.
Representative Claflin?
Aye.
Representative Detmer?
No.
Representative Eklund?
Aye.
Representative Fabian?
No.
Representative Hornstein?
Yes.
Representative Lippert?
Yes.
Representative Mecklen?
No.
Representative Nelson?
Yes.
Representative Purcell?
Aye.
Representative John?
Yes.
Vote be 10-4. The motion passes. Any further comments, questions from the committee today? Seeing none, our next meeting will be Wednesday, February 20th, in this room. Committee is adjourned.